My two guests today both want to help people live their lives to the fullest at any age, but they go about reaching that goal in very different ways. Tim McCormick is the founder and co-owner of the Integrative Life Center in Nashville, which uses a variety of approaches to help replace negative habits or addictions with joyfulness. Gary Kehoe, on the other hand, was instrumental in developing M-Drive, a specially prepared medication that helps people maintain their youthful vigor. Gary, welcome to the show. Many products are advertised as helping people maintain their youthful vigor. How is M-Drive different? What distinguishes it? How can it help people overcome what you call the I'm too old for that syndrome better than any other product can?
Well, a lot of research went into M-Drive. I actually started working on the formulation for myself about, it's been 10, 12 years now, when I was hit around 44 myself, and I started to notice I was starting to feel fatigue and not recover as well. And of course, it always helps to have a research lab that I manage. But I knew there was bioactives that were available that I could, start building around. And I was always intrigued with the power of the mushroom, more specifically cordyceps and maitake, reishi. And it really started around cordyceps. I recognized that there were bioactives in cordyceps that help increase energy, at a cellular level, very high in adenosine and cordyceptic acid. I wanted to improve respiration, circulation, oxygen uptake. There was a lot of stuff that I was trying to target. And, of course, identifying those bioactives was the key. And once I was able to do that and produce an energy, if you will, with the cordyceps, and I started working around it to strengthen it more with maitake and good old reliable American ginseng and ginsenosides. And then I started adding fenesterols to the formulation to try and improve the uptake of testosterone, which the body, normally has healthy levels of. It's usually just difficult to access. So it was a combination. At the end of the day, I had 17 different bioactives working in synergy to help feel stronger and improve my own endurance and my own stamina.
Do you have a very significant background in chemistry or biochemistry that you were able to do this?
I actually started out with a desire to be a biologist. So when I went to school, I started in biology and ended up actually moving myself towards marketing. I started working in a research laboratory when I was 17 years old, and I did it the hard way. I started as a associate technician to a technician to a senior technical specialist to a master technician, associate food technologist, and so on. And my wife actually has her master's degree in physical chemistry. So between myself, as I view myself as a scientist and visionary, and her as a real solid chemist, between the two of us, we've been actually very functional and done it's just been a good match.
Do you have any success stories you can tell us about what M-Drive accomplished?
Oh, we got an email just last week, and it came in from a guy that said that he had tried testosterone gels and he had some side effects and some other issues and problems. And he said that he had used M-Drive, and he said that he had felt tremendous energy. He actually lost weight. He felt really good again. And it was one of those testimonials, when you read it, you think it looks and sounds fake. And one of the guys here, one of my partners, sent me an email with it attached. And he goes, "Gary, this is exactly why we created M-Drive. This is just heartwarming." Of course, I read it, and I felt good about it. I had another example I had last year. Was from a gentleman that was a mason, and he was in his 60s, and he was still laying stone, and he was still doing fireplaces and stone walls, and he was concerned that he wasn't going to be able to make a living because he was starting to feel old and tired, and he just wasn't sure he could keep lifting rocks just for a living. And And he said that he had purchased SunDrive. He'd read about it and heard about it, and he wanted to say thank you, that he's feeling strong again, and he's looking forward to working. And, you know, there are times when you hear great things, and it makes you feel very good.
How would you respond to somebody who said, MDrive may be a wonderful product, but it's not a magic wand. It's not a panacea. If somebody is way overweight, they never exercise, they smoke, their diet is not the world's best, how can MDrive help them? How can it overcome any of that?
Yeah, well, I would agree with them. It's not a, I always tell people that, you know, it's sort of a three-step process. Number one is you've got to get motivated to make a change, and you've got to do something good for yourself. You got to say, listen, I got to start a routine, or I got to do something to exercise. And even if you can just get somebody to just start walking around the block, they make an effort to walk around the block. Before you know it, they're doing two or three blocks, and then before you know it, they're walking a mile. And then they start to feel good about themselves and their accomplishments, and then they start walking 2 or 3 miles. Once you can get them started, the more they do, the more they can do. And then, of course, diet. You know, especially as we get older, you can abuse yourself and get away with it when you're younger, but when you get into your 40s, you can't do that stuff anymore. You have to start thinking about what you're eating. Reducing inflammation is key. Staying away from simple sugars and even complex carbohydrates. Lean proteins, obviously eating more fish, and of course fruits and vegetables. Anything that has any live foods or things that still have live enzymes are great. You know, we don't digest things like we used to. As we get older, our body produces less enzymes, less peptides. So you have to be more, you know, concerned about what you eat and how you do it. And then the top of the tier and the last is the supplementation. Once you start working out and getting off the couch and doing more, then obviously eating, and then I say supplementation, because supplements can help. Now, the one thing good about our product, what we've tried to do is give people an element of energy and do it without caffeine. I'm not talking about stimulating the central nervous system. I'm talking about creating ATP at a cellular level so that the cells have the energy, so it's sustainable. To strengthen the adrenal glands, and so that you can continue to do it day in and day out. But no, there's no magic elixir. But if you have a commitment and you're willing to get started, it's the best support for it and to keep you going. And most men and or women, once they get started and they see results, or they have a friend say, "Wow, you're looking good," or "I can see a difference in you," once they get some positive reinforcement like that, they'll stick with it. And of course, the best thing that could happen to them is when others appreciate what they're doing, and then say, "Wow, if he can do it or she can do it, you know, I can do it." And then all of a sudden, your friends, your family, your coworkers, they get involved and they start making a difference and working out or getting back to their prime or better shape, and it's fun. And of course, having an excuse to maybe buy a new wardrobe and buy a smaller size is a lot of fun as well.
But how can you put this in a framework of the fact our country is becoming heavier and heavier, no matter what wonderful message anybody delivers about the need to exercise and eat healthier foods? How do you counteract that?
Well, when I call it diabesity, because what happens typically when you gain weight like that is, you know, diabetes begins to become an issue or a problem, and of course, being obese is never good. Once you get heavier like that, you start slowing down. In guys, it's tough too, because the body typically will store more estrogen, and you start to feel fatigued. And then it compounds itself. You literally open the door to diseases, and I'm talking about heart disease, cancer, and you open up the door. Diabetes. You don't want to start that. You want to prolong that as long as possible. You know, people talk about antioxidants and aging, but having too much weight on the body is the fastest way to age yourself. Oxidation, eating too much food is the quickest way to wear yourself out and cause excessive oxidation. You don't want to do that either. Now, with men, and we recognize a lot of guys when they get into their 40s, for example, they start to feel fatigued or tired, or they start putting weight on around the waist, and they're not maybe changing their diet, or maybe they're still They're still exercising the way they used to, but they're not. It's not having the effect. What I said, we put phenosterols in the product. We recognize too that guys will have healthy testosterone levels, perhaps, but they don't have the ability to uptake that testosterone. There's a big difference between a man's total testosterone levels and actual free testosterone. And that free testosterone, meaning testosterone that the body can actually uptake, absorb, and actually use. Mm-hmm. What we've done in this formula as well is to incorporate phenosterols from fenugreek seed, which actually, and it's a hypothesis, and I can tell you that we've seen the clinical studies and the results, but we're not exactly sure of the mechanism. But these phenosterols are used in the industry as surfactants, and it's our belief that there's loosely bound testosterone in the body. We know that as you get older, right around the age of 40, there's what's called a sex hormone binding globulin, and that tightly binds testosterone in men, and it's very noticeable that that hormone binding globulin goes sky high at right around the age 35, 40. It starts spiking very quickly. When that happens, as testosterone becomes more and more bound, we start seeing less results, even though we may have a good total level. There's also about 30-35% of the testosterone in the body that's loosely bound in an albumin. It's a gelatinized protein. We believe that the phenosterols are helping loosen that tightly bound testosterone, which makes it more available to a guy, an older guy, so that though we're not changing the regulation of his testosterone, but what we are doing is giving him the ability to uptake what he has so he recovers quicker, has more energy, and feels good. The analogy I use is taking an enzyme lactase, for example, when you no longer have the ability to digest the sugar, lactose. And then obviously you have a difficult time, say, eating pizza or American cheeses and so on. So you're helping the body do something that it's not able to do on its own. You're sort of helping it along.
But you talk about what happens when the body ages. Isn't this a natural process? Do you really think you can turn it back or forestall it? Isn't this just something that happens?
I do think that, I believe our DNA is programmed, and I don't think you're ever going to change that. What I do believe, though, is that many people age prematurely, or they age more quickly. If you increase the oxidation process and you overburden the body, I definitely will age faster. How many people are having knee operations and hip operations these days, or back problems? When you carry, and I've done this, I'm an avid backpacker. You can carry, or I can. I've noticed it. If I put 10 pounds more in my backpack than I can normally carry, I usually don't go more than 35 pounds. Say, even 10 pounds extra, I can feel it in my back, my knees, my hips. When I see people overweight, I know that the deterioration rate in their knees is going to be phenomenally high in their ankles and feet, and you begin to perpetuate that aging process. You're prematurely aging. From genetically, I think you're pre-programmed, but as far as the world around you, do I think you can accelerate that aging? Absolutely, if you don't take care of yourself.
There was, as I'm sure you've heard, the woman, Diane Nead, who swam from Florida to Cuba. She was 64. Now, that's wonderful, but she has probably always had a physical makeup that had intense endurance. You're touching on this, but I'd like to have you talk a little more. Do you think if early aging, or aging on a more normal scale, is in somebody's DNA, do you think this medication can help them overcome that?
I think it'll definitely give them more energy, and yeah, I do, and I think it'll increase their oxygen levels. I do think as well, and you know, 2 months ago there was a Kodiak 100 race, and we sponsored it in Big Bear, California. And the top two winners were 57 and 53 years old. And this is a 100-mile run up and down mountains. I believe, and I've seen it, that cardio and respiration in older people is actually, in my opinion, more efficient than it is in younger people. When you see a lot of these endurance races and these ultra, and I'm talking about ultra marathons, where they're doing 100 miles, you'll see that older people do very, very well. Their body manages, their body requires less oxygen and manages it better. They do phenomenal. And of course, there's a mental edge there. They know how to manage pain. They understand themselves, their bodies. They know what to do, and they're smarter about it. I see a lot of men and women that are in their 40s set themselves out to do a marathon. And I think they're actually better prepared to run a 5, 10, 10K or a marathon in their 40s and 50s than they were when they were in their 20s and 30s. They know themselves better, and I think their endurance actually is better.
Mm-hmm. And you think that anybody who sets a goal for themselves of gaining better endurance and more strength can, no matter what their DNA?
Obviously the increase or the how far they raise the bar could be less depending on the DNA, but certainly as a percentage of what they can do now versus what they'll do 6 months from now, if they set their goal, I think it could still be 100% improvement. Now, obviously, if you're 5'2" and somebody else is 6'2" and you're predisposed to gain weight, it could be more difficult. And by the way, a lot of weight gain too can be something simple like a lack of iodine in the diet and an inactive thyroid, especially with women. I always tell women that if they're finding themselves fatigued and gaining weight, that they should not only test their hormone levels, their own estrogen and progesterone and testosterone and DHEA and various enzymes, but they should test their thyroid, and they should consider some natural alternatives. We're seeing a lack of iodine in the diet. A lot of women and men are staying away from iodized salt, and I think it's becoming a problem. Vitamin D, I'm sure you've heard of it, vitamin D deficiency. Your body can't assimilate hormones and convert progesterone and DHEA and uptake testosterone properly without vitamin D. As people become more and more concerned about getting out in the sun or they're using more sunscreen, the body has a difficult time synthesizing its own vitamin D. And of course, as you have more and more people concerned about drinking milk because they're worried that perhaps the cows or the livestock was getting hormones or getting antibiotics, they're staying away from dairy products and milk, which actually had vitamin D fortification. So there's a lot of things that are happening that around in our environment that are making a difference as well. We really have to think about what's missing, what we're lacking, and compensate.
Gary, thank you very much for being a guest on the show. Much has been written and said about the link between television watching and children. Many observers fear that it could be harming children by exposing them to violence. Not much has been written about the link between older people and television, but it may be just as strong, and the effect of the media might be just as corrosive. Stay tuned for more information about this. Thank you. Lee, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Harriet.
Why do you think the Integrative Life Center is needed? Why do you think this is essential?
You know, the primary reason behind it is the point of view that we hold when we do recovery work or healing work or what I call reality-oriented work with people, meaning that, when you're doing addictions treatment work or mental health work generally, trauma work, that's the whole array. For the most part, what people are really suffering from is their experience in life and their interpretation of life, what they believe about the world, and how they perceive their reality, how they frame their reality, and largely the vast majority of issues that we work with in what we call recovery, whether it's, you know, drug addiction, alcoholism, sex addiction, eating disorders, those are all more symptomatic than they are the actual foundational issue. So the underlying foundational issue typically, in my experience, comes back to life experiences that have, in one way or another, distorted our perception of ourself first and our perception of the world. And at the Integrative Life Center and in the treatment programs that I've been a part of over the last 15 or 16 years, what I realized is that our greatest calling is to bring our attention back to the truth of who we are really. Not trying to be somebody else, not trying to create a new identity, but literally bringing people back to the fact that, you know what, you were born okay, you were born fine, you're perfect the way you are, and what's happened to us is the experience of living in this world and all the stuff that's going on in this world that was happening before you ever got here. And our opportunity is to bring our attention back to who am I really, what am I doing here really, and what are the beliefs and the filters and the reactions and the patterns of living that get in the way of sabotaging our happiness. You know, what are those things that undermine the integrity of our life and our living an authentic, at peace, grounded, good enough perspective on life? And that's the focus of the Integrative Life Center. It's about working with the whole person. And
wonderful.
Working with your whole reality.
But what makes you think you have accomplished this? In other words, that sounds great, but that's a very big challenge. What makes you think you have accomplished this for people?
Just the outcomes, the nature of the shifts and the changes that we see. And, you know, it's always dependent upon the individual client's interest. There are people who all they want to do is find a way to make their current existing reality more comfortable. They're not, you know, they don't have the interest in going any deeper than that. So they want to address the behaviors, but they don't really want to look at the whole picture. And then there's a large majority of people that, you know, you come into a program, you're literally living in the culture of and within the, you're living in the culture of the staff that's there and the energy that staff holds and the way that we work together. And you're also living with the energy and the community and culture of the other clients that are there. And it's actually the community of clients doing work together that does more, I believe, to inspire growth and inspire people to be willing to really question things in their life and look at their life from different points of view. The community of other clients has more impact, really, than the staff does, as far as I'm concerned. And the staff's responsibility is to hold an energy where that can happen, where people are supported in that regard, and you literally see it in how people carry themselves. You see it, you know, in their happiness factor as they're working through their issues. You get to where you realize that what you're seeing people really wake up, and they're waking up to right here, right now, and waking up to the power that they hold to recreate their life, recreate, you know, to heal things that need healing, to let things go that really no longer important, but we didn't realize they weren't important, so we keep dragging it around with this old stories, old judgments and opinions, and you literally see it on people. So that's how I know it works.
Can you give an example? In other words, somebody was having real challenges with these, and these issues. They came to your center. They worked some of these strategies and guides, and it made a big, big difference.
Well, I mean, you know, it's not out of our center, but my life is an example of it.
How'd you know that's what I was going to ask next?
Well, you know, I mean, I could give you lots of examples. I don't know how valuable they'll be because it's hard to frame the whole story, but I've got a number of people that work, that I literally work with now, that were clients of other treatment programs that I created. And, you know, for instance, one guy came in, he came to treatment probably 9 years ago, or maybe 10 years ago now, I guess. And he was basically from a big Italian mafia family. And he was a heroin addict. He had owned a business of his own, and he'd just grown up in so much chaos and so much tension, and such a conflicted environment, you know, and violence and just craziness, that he literally had no real connection to his own heart and his own spirit, because he'd more or less grown up in a reality that was kind of survival oriented. And there was no real heart and soul. There was no real affection or support, you know, on a heart and soul level for a kid growing up. It was just a big, big, rough family situation. And over a period of a couple of years, he just completely transformed his life, and he works in the recovery business today. You know, because he realized that, and this is the realization, actually, is that what we inherit in this world does not define us. We may have come to define ourselves by our experiences in life, and those experiences still do not define what we are. They define what we've experienced, and our behaviors are a reflection of the ways that we have come to cope with life, and operate in life and in the world based on what we've experienced growing up and what we've experienced, you know, as young adults. You know, as children, our reasoning mind isn't even in gear. It doesn't exist until we're close to being a teenager. I mean, the first 6 years of our life, our entire reality is really a creative space. There is no reasoning mind there. So children, we as children inherit the energy, we inherit the experiences, we inherit what we see, and that really sets the framework for the rest of our life. It sets the framework for how we interpret life and how we respond to life on a subconscious level. So in the recovery work, there's just individual after individual over 15 or 16 years that I have seen literally wake up to the fact that they can go back and clean up those agreements and those wounds and those reactions and those patterns of behavior that are so deep-seated in us. You know, like we say all the time, a lot of people realize this, when you have kids and, you know, you might say when your first child is born, boy, I'm never going to behave like my dad did, or I'm never going to be like my mom was. And then one day you realize that your mom or your dad is talking out of your mouth, you know, and you're like, oh my God, I'm just like my parents. You know, that's that subconscious imprint that we receive as children. And of course it comes out of us, and there's nothing to judge about it. It's just that, okay, once you've realized that these behaviors are that deep-seated, you can bring your attention to them and you can begin to change them. You can make new agreements with yourself.
How did you happen to become involved with the recovery world or with the center?
From my own experience, just getting to a point in my life at 40 years old that I couldn't just keep living the way I had been living. You know, I had a big life. I was a rancher and I was a commodities trader, and I'd spent several years in the music business, and I had been married and was recently divorced, and I had a long running relationship with cocaine since I was 21 years old, 22 years old, and I was 40. And the patterns in my life had gotten so prevalent you know, literally my reaction to a great day was to go out and party, and my reaction to a terrible day was to go out and get high. So, and it's interesting that, you know, in addictive patterns, what happens in an addictive pattern is literally our reality gets smaller and smaller and smaller. You know, the breadth and the scope of the opportunities in life and the, you know, the array of peoples that we hang out with and the whole menu of choices that we have on a day-to-day basis, they just get smaller and smaller and smaller over time when you're living with an addictive pattern in your life. And I got to a point to where I was just miserable. For several years, I didn't like what I would do. And I just didn't have the consciousness or the awareness to realize that I was literally an addict. I thought I was, you know, I thought it was just the way it was. You know, because we lose our reference point. Our reference point to what it's like to really feel good and be free and be happy gets lost. And we can't remember what that even felt like when you're lost in an addiction. And so I was in a relationship with a woman who said, you know, my dad had been in AA, and you have a problem, and, you know, you need to do something about it. And it was the truth, and I didn't really understand. I'd never been around 12-step programs. I'd never been friends with anybody in recovery. I had no reference point for that, but also knew that it was the truth. And so I found a therapist, and the therapist recommended that I go to treatment, and so I did. I just admitted myself to a treatment program. And I had a huge experience. It was heartbreaking, and it was inspiring. It was like everything you can experience all wrapped up in one 45-day period, and it really changed. It changed my perspective on everything, and it ended up being more inspiring to me than anything else.
How has your experiences, your own personal experience, and your experience at the center changed the way you view aging? Many Americans are very frightened of aging, want to avoid even thinking about it, knowing about it, seeing it. How has this changed your view of aging?
Well, that's a great question. When I was, like I said, I was 41 when I checked myself into treatment, and I'm 57 now. You know, I realized through the depth of the real truth of what we experience in life that's so tragic, the trauma, you know, the child abuse, the rape, the anger, the just all of the stuff that is the legacy of humanity, because that's what all that baggage is. It's the legacy of humanity. All of that stuff that we step into when we're born into this world is so profoundly disturbing and heartbreaking. And when you face it face to face with positively oriented support and empowering oriented support, like we do at the Integrative Life Center and like I've done in programs I've created, you realize that we really truly hold the power within us to create a life of grace and beauty, just like we have created a life that's a mess. And that's a further perpetuation of the same messes that we inherited or that we were born into. You know, we only have two choices with what we inherit being born into the world. We either perpetuate what we inherited or we wake up to it and we transform it and we evolve it and we're conscious and we're present. That waking up process at any age is like the fountain of youth to me, in that it's like you realize the true preciousness of life and the true power that we hold as human beings and the preciousness of our heart and our spirit, and the relationship to the greater relationship to consciousness and spirit, whatever form, whatever language you want to use, that's irrelevant to me. I don't care if you're Christian or a Jew or a Hindu or a Muslim, that's completely irrelevant to me. It's about our relationship to our own heart and our own spirit and our own self, and the rest of it comes after that, in my experience. And it's so inspiring to realize the sweetness and the preciousness of life that you then want to turn around and look at life face to face, and the fear around death, literally the fear around death, you know, the fear of aging is the fear of death. And culturally in the United States, we live with such a fear of death that it literally can keep us from even enjoying, you know, the present moment, which death is inevitable. It's a fact of life. So there's a real cultural disconnection and issue there. And see, we've given up on elders. We don't have elders in our society. We don't recognize the wisdom of our elders. And they're not a part, a valued aspect of the culture. And that's really, it's really kind of, what would you call it? It's unfortunate. It's just really a drag. Because all of that wisdom and all of that life experience is such a gift, and the perspectives and relationship to what's truly a value in life that elders have to share with people in their 20s or 30s or even 40s, you know, is just invaluable, because you can't get that from a book. You can't get that from an education. So, you know, the aging process in relation to recovery is a wake-up call to the preciousness of life itself. And when that's done in a very grounded manner and in a wholesome, whole person, integrative manner, it's an awakening of our consciousness, I think, into the present moment. You know, I've lived two or three lifetimes in this one life. It's almost like I've been reincarnated while I was still traveling around in the same body. And I've certainly found a sweetness and an appreciation and a gratitude for life in my 50s, late 40s and 50s, that I know is directly related to the fact that, you know, that I was in recovery. And my gratitude is for all of it. There's no part of my life. Sure, there's some things that I would change if I could change them, but you know what? It doesn't matter. At this point, it is what it is. And I don't live looking back. I live right here, right now. And I love living. And that's something that I see with a lot of people that I work with and people that come through our programs, is you end up falling in love with life again. And when you fall in love with life again, you can't help but love and appreciate yourself.
How have these experiences you're discussing influenced your career in country music? I understand you're a country music artist. How has there been an interrelationship between these things?
Well, you know, I'm not really an active artist anymore. I do still write, and I am still... I just wrote most of a soundtrack for a film, you know, in the last year, 18 months, and I still play some. But, you know, music has always been one of my ways of expressing how I feel. It's an expression. And it's been with me forever. And I got into the business when I was 24 years old, you know, and got on the road and played and spent 9 years playing all the time. And it became about the business for a while, that, you know, you judge how well you're doing, and you either feel good about yourself because your career is going well, or you feel bad about yourself because your career is going well. And there's a shift of attention and value from literally the gift of the art of playing music and the expression of that, and you start giving all the attention and the value to what we would call the career and the success of the career, which is, it's the way our culture is. But the truth is, the only thing I really cared about ever was the music, you know. And then I quit for a number of years, and I didn't do anything for a few years. You know, and then I'll pick up a guitar again, and it's like, well, you know what, this is what I always was, what it was about anyway. And I think it's like that for a lot of us who have, you know, an artistic calling. I don't care what it is. It can be knitting, it can be painting, it can be, you know, woodwork, it can be whatever. What I have found in my life, the things that I loved as, you know, as a kid, and the things that I have done in my life, regardless of the point of my life, that I really love doing, they always seem to come back around. You know, I grew up on ranches, and I've grown up working cows and horses. My dad had a ranch in Wyoming, and my family homesteaded ranches in Florida back in the 1800s. And so I've been around cattle and horses and open spaces and in the woods and stuff. And I grew up, you know, close to the beach in Florida. And, you know, here I am, I'm 57 now, and I'm back living on a ranch with 800 cows and a bunch of horses and a flock of sheep and, you know, a crew of characters in Tennessee, and, you know, my guitar's sitting here in the room. And so the things that I've loved in my life, when my life got rough and times got harder, you know, my life, I just, you know, my heart gets broken or I'm down, I would always try and find a way to come back to something that I really love doing.
Unfortunately. If people want to find out more about your ranch and your work, how can they contact you or get this information?
It's integrativelifecenter.com. That's the recovery program in Nashville. And our ranch and our farm is thepinewoodfarm.com. So thepinewoodfarm.com. And theintegrativelifecenter.com. You can reach me through either one of those two websites.
Thank you very, very much for being on the show. And have a good holiday.
Well, you too, my dear. Have a great one.
I will.
All righty. Thank you.
I mentioned before that there's a link most people don't realize between television and elders. Let me talk a little bit more about that now. Television programs often depict older people as being cranky or otherwise unpleasant, or possibly worse yet, they marginalize the aging by not portraying them at all. Yale researcher Becca Levy notes that although persons 65 years and older comprise 12.7% of the American population, this group makes up less than 2% of all prime-time television characters. And she maintains that television's treatment of seniors should not simply be ignored as representing nothing more than a harmless oversight or just plain silliness. Rather, she claims that seniors develop negative stereotypes of the aging process as they are exposed to insensitive television programming, and these sentiments can prove harmful to them. To learn more, go to http://www.harriettremor.com and click on A Place to Grow. www.harriettremor.com and click on A Place to Grow. Thank you very much for listening, and I hope you will join us again.